LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Find it now at kcrw.com or subscribe on iTunes.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
I couldn't be another guy walking around with a script. There's way too many of them, right? And I couldn't even be a guy walking around with books, because lots of people are doing that as well. What do I have to do? So I gave myself a green light.
Trevor Price spent 14 seasons as a defensive end in the NFL. In the offseason, he devoted himself to various creative endeavors, including his passion project, an original animated series. Once he retired, he made his show His Way, and Koolapari, An Army of Frogs, is streaming now on Netflix. But first on the News Banter, the Clinton-Trump debate looms. Would you want to be NBC's Lester Holt right now? Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So the debates are upon us, and this first meetup between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is going to draw a number, and it could be a record breaker.
Yeah, I mean, we had an interview this week with Jim Lehrer, the former PBS newsman who moderated 12 debates. He predicts this will be the most watched debate ever. Currently, that number is the 1980 debate between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter, which got to 80 million viewers. The most recent debates have been hovering in the 60 million people. And keep in mind, this is across a number of networks, you know, the cable news networks, plus the traditional broadcast networks and a couple others. So, you know, I don't know what the prediction is. We're having an office pool here at Hollywood Reporter to guess the number. I'd say probably 70 or 80 is a good chance.
Yes, we have an office pool. It will be a big number. I feel like we should disqualify people who write about ratings for a living, maybe. But
you know what, though? Our awards prognosticator did not win our Emmys pool, so,
so there. Right?
You never know.
You never know. Trump, of course, has complained about the moderator, Lester Holt, claiming that he is a Democrat, when in fact he is a registered Republican. So he is obviously setting up his debate is rigged argument, and we will see how rigged it seems to be.
No, I mean, the real challenge here is on the moderator, because this is an unusual election in that the candidates, especially Donald Trump, have made the media a part of the story, starting with Megyn Kelly in that first Republican debate and throughout his campaign, where he's banned outlets and he attacked the New York Times, threatening to sue and claiming that the moderators are out to get him. He's already said Anderson Cooper, who's going to moderate one of the later debates, shouldn't be doing it because CNN is the Clinton News Network. So I think there's going to be a lot of attention, and especially on Lester Holt, who is at NBC News, after everything that happened with Matt Lauer. When he interviewed both candidates at that forum a couple weeks ago, he was really criticized for going after Hillary Clinton and going easy on Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I haven't heard a lot of complaints about Chris Wallace, who's set to be a moderator down the road. So turning to the ongoing turmoil at Viacom, it's been now revealed that Tom Dooley, the interim CEO who took over after Philippe Dumont, was finally ousted by Shari Redstone and presumably her 93-year-old father, invalid father. Tom Dooley isn't going to stay. There was some thought, I don't think it was very realistic, that Tom Dooley could go forward and try to salvage this very damaged company. But he is not sticking around. I think the board made it clear that he had no future there. And he said, fine, I'll take my 60-some million dollars to go away. And that leaves Shari Redstone and her newly installed board with a time clock running to figure out what is going to happen. And the question on everybody's mind, particularly on Wall Street and shareholders, is will this company ultimately re-merge with CBS, which is the successful sibling company? And it's no small challenge if that's going to happen.
Yeah, the analyst community seems to believe that a recombination is the best move. But I think that's easier said than done. You have one company, CBS, that is perceived to be thriving in this very challenged media universe. And then you have Viacom, which just had its debt rating cut and is perceived to be in turmoil. So, you know, putting them together, even if you can convince someone like Leslie Moonves, who's currently the chairman of CBS, to take over a merged company, I think there are still a lot of questions about how these companies would be recombined.
And he's going to want to press for advantage in terms of share price. He wants the CBS shareholders to look very whole. He wants to have control. Whether Sherry Redstone and the new board is willing to yield that is really unclear. But then they have to find somebody else. And there is just this almost unanimous perception that Les Moonves, I mean, the expectations for him are so high, but that he is the guy who can do this. So we will have to see going forward how that plays out.
He also is one of the highest paid CEOs in America. And the other highest paid CEO in the media world was Philippe Domand. So is Les Moonves going to take on both those salaries? I mean, that would make him, I think, the highest paid person in the world.
In the history of the world.
Yeah, that will not happen. But the point is that he would probably want an increase in compensation as well if he were to do this. And I think that would prove another quandary for the board.
Although I'd probably the least of all the worries. So meanwhile, Goldman Sachs had a conference this last week, an investor conference, and a couple of interesting things came out. Bob Iger talking about the next installment in the Star Wars saga, Rogue One. There have been a lot of press reports it's a troubled project. He said it is, he called it, quote, an experiment of sorts. It's a standalone film. I think by calling an experiment of sorts, he's hoping to maybe set it apart from the rest of the Star Wars world. So it will, if it doesn't work, it won't be perceived as some kind of Death Star for Star Wars.
Maybe. I also think there's an element of lowering expectations in general here. Disney knows that, you know, this is not The Force Awakens. And I think that what the nightmare for Disney is that Rogue One opens really well in December. And because it doesn't match The Force Awakens, people deem it a failure. And I think that is a fair concern for them to have. I mean, the first reboot had the original Star Wars stars in it, you know, including Harrison Ford, who's a big movie star. So there was a lot of anticipation and, you know, 2 years of media buildup for it. This movie is not that. This movie has much less star power. It is a separate story. So I think it's smart for Disney to lower expectations.
Meanwhile, Jeff Bukas of Time Warner acknowledged that the DC Comics universe, Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad, could possibly, you know, there could be what he called room for improvement at the same Goldman Sachs conference. I think we probably know what he means.
That's code for your Rotten Tomatoes score. It really sucks.
We'll see if they can do better with future versions of DC comic movies. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, executive editor of The Hollywood Reporter. Trevor Price started his pro football career with the Denver Broncos and was on the field when the team notched back-to-back Super Bowl victories in the late 90s. In 2006, he was signed by the Baltimore Ravens, and he played his final season in 2010 with the New York Jets.
Trevor Price, with the pressure forcing the safety. And Cincinnati had the lead at the half, folks, and now Trevor Price and the Jets making the Bengals pay.
In the off-season, Price was pursuing another career, making music, TV shows, and movies. For as long as he can remember, his mind has swarmed with ideas.
You know, I grew up a hyperactive kid. So, you know, you're hyperactive both athletically, and when you can't be outside playing, your brain still races. So I can never sit still. So I was making beats, and I love music, and I was a pretty good artist as a kid. You take that same thinking and the way my mind works and the way my body worked, and then you add time and money being a professional athlete, and you wind up in Hollywood.
Price's journey started with one of his beats. He got a song on the soundtrack of Big Mama's House 2 in 2006. Fox flew him out for the premiere, and he was hooked. Now retired from the NFL, Price is devoting himself full-time to writing and producing. His first big project is Koolapari, an animated series about a frog army battling evil scorpions. The 13-episode season is now available on Netflix. By now, Price has had plenty of experience pitching ideas to Hollywood executives. He's found that being a retired football pro can often get him in the door.
Now, what happens very quickly is you walk in and the excitement of seeing the football player wears off in about 30 seconds.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's like, hey, I'm a Giants fan. Okay, why are you here? You know what I mean? So
right.
You better have something intelligent to say. You better have something different to say. You better have something unique to say. And I did.
So you actually did sell a movie idea. Like many movie ideas, it didn't get made. But in 2008, you did sell this idea to Doug Belgrad, who was then at Sony Pictures.
Yep.
And it's a guy who gets struck by lightning and becomes a walking encyclopedia.
Yeah.
So that was exciting, I bet. You know, you sold something.
It was. And the crazy thing was, I'm sitting there in a meeting, and it's Doug Belgrad and Devon Franklin.
Right, who has been a guest on our show. Yes.
Yeah, and he was a junior executive at the time. And I'm sitting there in this couch in Doug Belgrad's very big office, and I'm talking about my movie idea, which was fully fleshed out for some reason. I just knew how to do that, right? It was fully fleshed out as a treatment. And I get done pitching it, talking for 15 minutes, telling them a story, and it's supposed to be a comedy, and nobody's laughing.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, is this going well? I don't know. I've never done this before.
Right.
And when I get done talking, Doug says to me, he says, okay, what happens now? I said, I was hoping you'd tell me that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was partners at a big ad agency in Denver. And one of my partners, his brother was a Sony lot producer, was Adam Sandler's producer, Jack Garaputo. I said, I know Jack Garaputo. He said, thank God, go see him. And they bought it 10 minutes later.
So I did read some, I think I read, and maybe it was in the New York Times, you talked about getting through this process of pitching to these guys who aren't laughing. And you said, you got to believe in yourself. I remember looking at one studio guy who wasn't taking me seriously and saying, hey, man, I'm actually smarter than you.
I did it. I used to do it all the time. Because if someone's giving you their time, if an executive have given you their time and they give you a valid, concerning reason that they are passing on your idea, no harm, no foul. You know what I mean? I've been passed on 1,000 times. But when they're just going, yeah, I don't like it. I'm like, what? What do you mean you don't like it? You know what I mean? So I've had experiences where it's not that they're not taking you seriously or else they wouldn't have taken the meeting. But what I'm saying is if you're not giving the time and effort, even if the time is 5 minutes, to really concentrate and say, this is pretty cool, and you're asking me about my fantasy football team. I'm like, dude, I live on the other side of the country. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't live up the street. You know, and I've flown in from Maryland to have meetings canceled or pushed back, and I'm just like, you know, I'm so over it.
Yes, but you're not over it. You still have the thing, the Hollywood thing.
No, I have the Hollywood thing, but I went about it differently this time.
Right. Well, we'll get to that
very
in just a sec, but I just want to just check about this. When you said, hey, man, I'm smarter than you, did you literally say it or did you think it?
Yeah.
You literally?
No, I did.
And what happened?
I mean, what are they going to do?
I don't know. What did they do?
Nothing. He smiled and laughed.
Okay.
And I smiled and laughed right along with him.
I'm going to assume there was a pass on whatever you were pitching.
Yeah, no, he had passed before I walked in the room.
Right, okay.
He had basically passed as I. He said, "Yeah, we're not, and sometimes it's not just with Hollywood; it's with professional sports too. You know, bull when you see one, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, you see him 1,000 miles away."
Yes, I wonder about that. You know, when I used to live in Washington and I covered Washington, and people would always say, oh, Hollywood and Washington are so alike, but they're really not at all. Alike. And I wonder how alike is pro sports to Hollywood?
It's closer than people think, but it's also, it's both. So for instance, I tell people all the time, this is the way the NFL works. If I'm a quarterback and I can't throw the 20-yard out, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers aren't going to invite me back next season to see if I've learned it.
Right.
You have one shot.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've gone to several executives, several companies who keep asking me to come back. What else do you have? And I keep getting no's from them. But the fact that they see something in me or somebody else like me, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm not talking about me in general, but the fact they see something, hey, there's a creative through line to what he's saying that actually makes sense. Let's have him back again if he calls. That's how Hollywood works. The NFL does not work like that. If you can't do it, believe me, you are not heard from again. Believe me.
I do believe you. So you retired after 14 seasons. You were 36 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's possible you could have kept playing. I don't know.
Absolutely, I could have.
So why were you done?
I think some of the Hollywood thing, and it's not a physical thing. I still, quote unquote, run fast.
Mm-hmm.
But at my age, I can't run fast for 2 hours. you know what I mean?
Right.
So if you want me to come play and have 10 plays a game, sure. But if I have to play 40 plays a game, we're going to have a real problem.
Right.
So that's really why I retired. And then one day you just kind of wake up and the off-season training is way too hard, and you just don't want to do it. You just cannot run through the woods anymore, and you can't go crawl in sand anymore. You're just like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. Like, I'm not going to get any fitter than what I am. You know what I mean? So
that's why I retired. Hollywood does to you, it doesn't do that.
No,
it doesn't make
no,
you run through
not
the woods.
Even close.
Right. It's wearing in a different way. not so physical.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
So you decided, and I don't want to pry into your personal finances, but I a lot of football players, you know, they're young, they're not super educated, and they burn their money. You seem like not that guy, but I'm sure you've seen it a lot.
No, I have seen a lot, and it wasn't a case of being that guy or not, because I had my fun. I mean, I built a big house and bought muscle cars and all kinds of things. But my wife and kids, when I got married and started having children, that makes your off-season part father, part football player, rather than living by yourself. And that creative thing I still had as a kid, it was either spend my money chasing that or spend my money buying exotic cars. And I decided to chase that.
So you are going to ultimately do this on this series that we are talking about today. Kulapari was this idea in your head. It was based, I read, on your childhood in Florida where there were a lot of frogs.
Yeah.
And obviously that was a passion project for you. And when you couldn't initially get it going, you decided to write it as books.
Yeah. So I came up with the idea and I wrote a movie script for it. And the script wasn't good and it was actually really, really different. It was called Poison and it was like really weird. But it was it had a legs of an idea. So I kept developing it my off seasons or when I was at home at night, and it kind of turned into Kulapari. But what really happened was I went and got art done. So I hired an artist named Sanford Green, who's now a Marvel Comics artist, and had my characters designed by him. And that's when it kind of all clicked together, because at that point, I'm showing art and not words. You know, and that was very important to me. I wind up selling Kulapari to Cartoon Network. And at the same time, my agents at ICM at the time, who I'm no longer with, they wind up sending that same treatment and that same art to a bunch of publishers. So I was doing two different deals at once, and one publisher, Abrams, said yes, and Cartoon Network said yes. So I had these two things happening at the same time, and I was like, this is cool, but I have no idea what's going to happen next. So I closed both deals, and the Cartoon Network, we started developing it, and what happened with Cartoon Network was Thundercats had just come out, and they were so excited about the relaunch of Thundercats, and then Thundercats failed, right? While Adventure Time and all those kind of humorous cartoons were doing so well, so they tried to turn Kulapari into a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine my face. And
yes,
like,
you loved that idea.
Like, what? No, right?
Right.
So that went bad really fast, and I got it back. I got Kulapari back, but at the same time, the books were coming out through Abrams. I had written the books with another writer, and we basically wrote the three books based on my screenplay. So I had to get Kulapari back. And when I got it back from Cartoon Network, it could have been very easy for me to go back around and try to sell it to another place and do that type of thing. But I was like, no, why would I do that? I think I have something really special and really different. So let me invest in it.
You didn't want to put it in the hands of another studio. You wanted to create this world in books. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I wanted to create it not so much in books, but all media, because the happy accident that Kulapari was the fact that I called it Kulapari. So the word Kulapari means poison in Aboriginal.
Mm-hmm. It's the first name that you had, but you just sort of gave it a twist, yeah.
Yeah, it's the first name that I had, but I had to call a professor of Aboriginal culture in Toronto, and he gave me like 30 words, and 29 of them I couldn't pronounce. So I was like, yeah, that one works, right? So it was always meant to be something that moves and talks on a screen. So I reverse engineered it into a book, but it was always supposed to be a movie or a TV show or something like that.
Coming up after a short break, Trevor Price tells us why he isn't going to talk about Netflix. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW Donation Car. Already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Check out KCRW's all-news channel, News 24. Programming from KCRW, NPR, the BBC, and more, 24 hours a day. Check out kcrw.com/news24 or listen on KCRW's app.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Trevor Price, a former NFL player who is now a writer and producer. He created the Netflix original animated series, Koolapari, An Army of Frogs. The hero of the action-packed show is Daryl, a wood frog voiced by Josh Keaton. Daryl dreams of joining the ranks of the elite, poisonous frog warriors called the Koolapari.
I'll be a warrior frogs can count on and look up to. I'll beat down an army single-handed and make it home in time for the parade.
Since Daryl is not a poisonous frog himself, the other frogs don't take him seriously until their village comes under attack. While Daryl goes off to fight, his mentor, Old Jeer, voiced by Mark Hamill, organizes troops on the home front.
The scorpions are coming. We can't rest until we're done. We don't know when. Maybe in a week. Maybe in an hour. We must be ready.
Price first released the Koolapari story in a series of three books. Bringing it to the screen took time and a serious investment of Price's own money. So you did a thing that, you know, you're not supposed to do in Hollywood with OPM. You're supposed to use other people's money.
Yeah.
But you didn't.
No. Oh, because who was going to give it to me? You know what I mean?
Well,
I
didn't. One reason. Yeah.
That's the only reason. You know, I realized if I started making it, then people would come towards me with money and that type of thing, because I figured living in Maryland, not being on the side of the country where all the business is happening, I couldn't be another guy walking around with a script. There's way too many of them, right?
Right.
And I couldn't even be a guy walking around with books, because lots of people are doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to do? So I gave myself a green light one day. I said, I'm just going to green light it. You know, Ava DuVernay, I read something of hers a long time ago, and she said, I would not let Hollywood tell me what I can and cannot make. And I was like, good for you. I'm going to do that.
But I'm sort of hearkening back without wanting to pry. I mean, you put aside enough money as an NFL player to be able to finance an expensive thing, right? It's not cheap.
No, no, it is not. Right. What I did is when I gave myself a green light, I went to a production company called Splash Entertainment, and they said the same thing I did. They said, no one's going to take you seriously until you start making it. And so I started making it. I had to. It was either that or it sits in my brain the rest of my life. And I just cannot do that.
So had you tried to find funding elsewhere, or did you just think it's never going to happen?
Yeah, I did. I went to some people and they didn't really, you know. But at the same time, if they fund it, they own it. You see what I mean? I was not about to go down that path again. You know, they would have turned Koolapari into a comedy for a second time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Control is a very, very big thing to me, because I spent almost 10 years writing the stories, you know, thousands and thousands of pages of information and characters and story arcs. And I've created this mini universe, and I will be damned if somebody tells me what I can and can't do with it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's really what it was. I had to spend my own money to keep control. And so once we started working on production, we went to three companies. Netflix was one of them.
So you produced the thing. I assume you had approval over everything. You had the voice casting, Mark Hamill, Wendy Malick.
Yeah. That, now, be careful what you wish for, because you give yourself a green light and all of a sudden you have a real job. Mm-hmm. So I wrote for the New York Times for a little bit. So I wrote a piece when I first
There's
retired.
Something you haven't done. Just tell me what it is and we can eliminate.
Politics.
Yes.
That okay. is it. That's the only thing. Everything else I've tried.
Okay.
I wrote for the New York Times, and I wrote a piece about retirement that was about me being bored. And boy, I wish I never wrote it, because all of a sudden I got very busy very fast, and it was almost overwhelming getting voice actors. And I was like, well, I don't know what they're going to sound like being my character. And so I had to learn to kind of look forward, you know what I mean? I went to my first voice session, and in walks Luke Skywalker, and you're like, what, right? And he sits down, and the first voice that comes out of his mouth, you're like, it's perfect, right? even if it wasn't, it was like, hey, you're Luke Skywalker, it's great.
Yes.
And so, you know, that type of thing. And other actors, I had to tell them, I had to close my eyes and say, no, that's not what he sounds like, higher, lower. And I couldn't voice direct. You know, Charlie Adler did all the voice direction. And he was very fast and very focused. And but, it, you know, all that stuff was new to me.
Where were you in the process when you made contact with Netflix?
We had one scene done and some tests. You know, I mean, animation just takes so long. And we were trying to find the rest of the money. And, you know, because I funded a big part in the beginning. You know what I mean? A rather large part. Mm. But it was like... okay, if I keep doing this, my wife's going to kill me.
Right.
So the whole idea was, let's get started and somebody will pick it up.
Right.
And Netflix kind of did that.
So did Netflix, they made you whole on whatever you had put in?
And I have a list of things I can and cannot say. Uh-huh. And one of those is that thing, right?
Comes from Netflix. Yes. Wait, you know, when you deal with Netflix, there's
rules.
It's
the Fight Club. The first rule of Netflix, you do not talk about Netflix. I'm just giving them a hard time because I can do that. None of them can beat me up. So the way their business works is the way their business works, and you just kind of have to deal with it.
Yes, that's what I'm told.
Yeah, but at the same time, that brand is so big. And here's the thing, that the saving grace for all of this is the fact that one of the lead executives read all three books.
Right.
And the third book actually came out and I had a PDF of it. I was like, oh, I'll send you a PDF. You can read it on your tablet, whatever. He said, no. I want the pages. I'll wait for the book to come out. I was like, yeah, I made the right decision.
That's very old-fashioned for a Silicon Valley company, but
go on. I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. And the fact that he did that made me realize I did the right thing. So I got an email from the other day. He said, thank you for not saying my name. I said, yeah, because if I did, you'd have 80 books in your desk tomorrow.
So, you know, it's a little random, and maybe you just can't talk about this. You know, a lot of people don't understand, like, how they decide what to market, the way they market, and
right.
It's mysterious.
And let me tell you why. Because we don't know. There
right.
you go. We don't, like, I don't know. I'm just, all I do know is inside those walls, the people that made the decision to bring in Kulapari and make it a Netflix original series really love it. And at the end of the day, honest to God, that's all I could control. You know what I mean? The rest of it comes from marketing and people that are way above even their pay grade. You know
right,
what I mean? The
right.
executives that do content are the only ones I deal with, and they're the only ones I know. I don't know anything else about the business. I'm like, why do they have a billboard and I don't have a billboard?
Right.
They're like, look, that's not, he's like, that is not my call. You know what I mean? So I know as little about that business as you do, even though I'm inside the walls and I know what the contract looks like.
Right. And they, of course, they don't tell you ratings. You just don't know.
No. But I do know what my mark is. I know what shows that Kulapari is being compared to. You know what I mean? Apples to apples. If it does this, then it's great. If it doesn't do that, then it's an absolute failure, right?
Right.
And they're very honest and open. And I think through the process of the scripts and the show, I mean, you barely hear. I mean, everything's just like, yeah, it's awesome. It's great. It's great. And I think a lot of that is we have 25 other shows to work on. We don't have time to do
yes,
all this with you.
That's very consistent with what I hear, yeah. So you have comic book and clothing, a clothing line, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And so at the end of the day, how are we netting out on, not no play on Netflix intended, but with your
right.
comic books and your shirts and whatever might have happened somewhere else, named
yeah.
Netflix, are you feeling comfortable? Are you feeling like this was a great idea or are you,
yeah,
where
I
are
do.
You?
I knew it would be like this. I knew it would be loss. And then eventually somebody's going to buy it. And the IP has been licensed by Netflix, Mattel, Under Armour, and there'll be a bunch more coming soon.
So what's next? Are you all Kulapari all the time now? Or I can't imagine
yes.
that you're just doing one thing. So
right. Yeah, hyperactive, right? Yes and no. There's a lot of Kulapari stuff. There's a platform game probably coming out next year on Xbox and PlayStation. And yeah, I never left the drama thing because one of my first sales, I sold a drama to ABC with Mark Gordon that didn't go anywhere. So I've always loved, you know, dramatic television. So I mm-hmm. wrote a magnum opus of a drama, a TV drama that I'm going to start pitching soon.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
Trevor Price, creator of Kulapari and Army of Frogs on Netflix. Thank you for coming in.
Absolutely, Kim. Thank you so much.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.